Today, on an all-new episode of the Enneagram Journey.
You woke up a snowman, got yourself gone. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen one. She said, one in a million, you got to burn a shine. You were born under a bad sign.
Welcome to the U.S. The toilet's backed up, and none of us know how to clean it.
Can't wait. Cheers to that. But first, I meant to introduce you to a new camper.
I'm not new.
This is Natalie.
Hold on.
Gabe?
Natalie.
Hey, guys.
You see, kids, gender is like pasta.
No, it's not.
There's many different shapes and sizes.
Making it worse. Oh,
what happened, Gabe?
Oh, God. Coming here was a terrible mistake. Look at them. They hate you. McCamp clearly did not read that detailed email from your mother. Say something already.
Please call me Natalie now. I wanted you guys to hear it from me that I'm transgender. I use she, her pronouns. I'm sure you're all totally comfortable with this, right?
Now, I'm sure you all have questions, right? And without consulting Natalie, I'm simply going to open up the floor for a free-for-all like a session of Parliament. I feel good about this.
And what I'm talking about is the pulse of the collective. Oh, heck. Let me just show you how it's done. Dad, how about a little percussion? Tap, tap, tappy. Tap, tap, tappy. Tap, tap, tappy. Tap, tap, tappy. Mom, hi-hat. Good, Mom. Excellent. And Gary, on the kick drum. Come, come. On the kick drum. Come, come. That's Gary. Come, come with the kick drum. Come. Come, come with the kick drum. Gary. On the kick drum. Come, come. That's Gary on the kick drum. Go. And Gary. In the house. Come, come. Come, come. With the kick drum. Come, come.
I'm just not really the kick drum kind of guy. I'd rather be just a listener and enjoy all the banging that he's doing.
You know, Gary, that's your prerogative. That's your right to listen.
Do you understand both and as opposed to either or? In a way that you can articulate?
That's a spectacular question, because I have been a really all or nothing person, which I think is part of the eight as well, but I really am an all or nothing. You know, my therapist is always catching me. Okay, that's very all or nothing thinking. You know, let's look at this in a different way. But I also think, you know, as we were talking, when we were getting on, we were talking about Barbie. And one of my good friends said, I'd love to have a conversation with you about Barbie, because you must have a very unique perspective of the movie and of the experience, because you grew up assigned female at birth. You have lived through that experience. And now you walk through the world perceived to be a white, straight cis man, usually, you know, that I really feel like it does give me perspectives that I can step into situations that most people cannot step into and see both sides of the story or the experience.
The Enneagram Journey is back. Apologies to everyone for the delay. I came down with quite the bug, but we're coming back the right way with a phenomenal episode and some exciting things to promote. Today's guest is New Jersey's own Alex Reagan. Enneagram 8, Alex is the author of What Needs to Be Said, as well as an interfaith minister, speaker, and transformative spiritual coach who uses his intuitive wisdom to help guide people towards their own inner knowing. Alex is also a member of the 2024 LTM Enneagram Cohort, and this is the second episode of our series that will be running all throughout the year, keeping up with three members of the cohort. Two things that we got to talk about first before the episode, and the first is a biggie. 2024 Enneagram Bootcamp with the Enneagram Godmother Suzanne Stabile is set, and early bird registration is now open. This year's topic is the Enneagram and stress, loss, and relationship. Join LTM for 3 days this summer in Dallas, Texas, Thursday, August the 1st through Saturday, August 3rd at The Grove, or if you can't join us in Dallas, there is an online option, which is absolutely great, but second best to being there in the room with everyone. We all suffer loss, whether it's a job, it's a person, or a relationship, and it all affects us differently. Suzanne is going to help us out, especially in dealing with how we cope with loss and stress. Some of the greatest Enneagram work we can do is around our stress line, and you know the greatest way to do that work is in community. We are also blessed that Courtney Perry of the Enneagram will be leading us in a pre-conference workshop again at the Micah Center. There will be two options for that opportunity as well. one on Wednesday night and a second on Thursday morning. Her teaching will also be tailored, connecting yoga, the Enneagram, and stress. If you know someone who attended the 2023 boot camp, talk to them, and they're going to tell you that this is an opportunity you want to be a part of if you can. Visit the link in the show notes or visit lifeinthetrinityministry.com or theenneagramjourney.com, and you'll be able to find your way to the event page and registration. I hope you'll be able to join us for 3 jam-packed days of solitary work that cannot be done alone. The second announcement is extremely exciting as well. Friend of the podcast and author and theologian Tony Jones will be visiting the Micah Center for a live podcast with Joe and Suzanne discussing his new book, The God of Wild Places, on Friday, April 26th. And he's bringing his friend, musician Ronnie Faust, to help with the show. You'll find the link for this incredible night of music, discussion, and fellowship in the show notes. And please stick around after today's podcast to hear more about The God of Wild Places and hear some of Ronnie's music. Finally, thank you, as always, for your support of Life in the Trinity Ministry and Joe and Suzanne's hard work. This podcast, live podcast, boot camp, cohorts, none of these things happen without your participation, your generosity, and everything you bring as a part of the LTM community. So we thank you. And now, it's time for Alex and Suzanne.
Someday, with permission, I'll tell a story about this past week and Suzanne and I recording around technology that just, I cried so hard. I think my abs are still worked out from laughing so hard, and it was yesterday.
Well, Alex is going to be with us for the year, so you can tell him in person, and then we don't have it recorded.
There you go. You can tell me next week.
Alex, I'm sorry. I'm working really hard on pronouns, and I just did that probably not well.
No, you did. He, him.
You did good. You got it.
Okay, great.
You're good.
You're definitely the first transgender individual who's been on the podcast that we know of.
Cool. Yeah.
And LTM is trying to grow and get it right. And we might slip up at times, but it's not.
It's okay.
Okay.
It happens. Happens to me.
Well, and I'm so thankful that I get to spend a year with you so that you can teach me and everybody in the room. Because until we all have teachers who are gracious, we are afraid to say the wrong thing. We, the collective we.
Yep.
So we don't say anything. And I think that's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. We're so short with each other and everyone. There's no space anymore to just have, you know, ask innocent questions and have conversation anymore. Everybody just is so nervous to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, have someone jump down their throats. And it's a hard time right now. But that's one thing I've tried to be, is just transparent and open. You know, especially after my book came out, I had so many conversations with people about different things. And I've tried to just, you know, answer questions and be open and ask questions of people as well, and to just have conversations, you know.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I hope to talk to you about it.
Great.
I love your books as well. So we're a big fan of yours in our household. When we heard you on Glenn and Doyle's podcast, that was really when we dove in with your work. And I mean, we've watched almost every video on the LTM website. We've gotten friends doing it. I mean, we've just really enjoyed your work. We've done a lot of different teachers and Enneagram stuff, but we really love and resonate so much with how you teach it. So I'm so excited to be coming next week and going on this journey with you all.
Great. I'll be ready for you. I just now noticed that Joel has on a Barbie t-shirt. That must be new, but I like it.
It was a good movie. I watched it and cried both times I watched it.
I thought it was very good. And I, you know, Joe was preparing for the priesthood during the Barbie doll years. There is so much that he missed because of the depth of study they did and spiritual practices that they did. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have free access to television or the newspaper, or while he was in novitiate. And during that time, he didn't come home for 9 years. So there's just a lot that happened culturally that he missed all of. Yeah. So I have to school him in a way for him to understand that when Barbie was released and how it affected women like me who wanted to coach basketball in a man's coaching world, even for female players and all the things. So yeah. I was not a Barbie fan, and now I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry. Yeah. I've yet to watch the Barbie movie by myself because I've always watched it with
like, other kids.
Because our five-year-old loves it so much, and they all do. And I'm like, but I honestly don't know. I know I love it, and I don't know why exactly. If that makes sense.
I love it.
I want to know why. I love it so much. I love everything about it. I love everything about it. And so,
but you don't even know why. I love it. That says so much about you, Joel. I love it.
I'll tell you another thing that came from that I think is really important. And that is being in the 2-3-4 triad, and because of things, experience shame easily. Mm. And Joe doesn't have much history with shame. And Joel was really struggling with what that meant and how that felt and all that. And after he saw the Barbie movie, he said, I feel shame for the first time. Mm. And if nothing else comes from that movie, it changes the conversation in our working partnership and mother-son partnership and all things.
Amazing.
One of the interviews I saw, because my mom's about to give me crap about this, much like the Texas Rangers World Series win, which I'm still just swimming
riding
in.
Riding high.
Yep.
Yep. Especially since the Cowboys lost, I assume.
There's no Cowboys pins on my backpack there.
Okay, good deal.
with that win and the Barbie movie, both, that I'm just still like I'll rewatch anything that has anything to do with either one of those. So I'll watch interviews, I'll watch highlights, I'll watch clips. And I saw a clip yesterday. I'll see if I can pull the audio for the when we release this. But it was of Margot Robbie. And they were talking about, and I didn't get to catch it all because I was reading the subtitles. I was somewhere where I couldn't do audio. But what she was talking about was like the fourth graph or fourth something, which was the male audience. They're like, how do we get all four or something? And then what they talked about was we just all need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm. And that, yeah. I think that is what I was feeling. And maybe that's how people describe shame, is just, or the healthy way of dealing with shame is being comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. But that was spot on.
Interesting.
How I felt.
Fascinating.
Well, anyway, we're off and running now. So it's happening. So this is the first recording with three individuals that we're for sure going to do two. One now, one at the end. And I was talking with Suzanne the other day. I was like, maybe there's a midway point that we do. We record this too, you know? So
yeah.
So with that being said, Alex, you're our first interview for this. Oh, and the part of the series being, the whole series being, three individuals that are going into the Enneagram cohort, that the first meeting is next week.
Awesome.
And then checking in right now, and then checking in later, and just kind of seeing how that year-long journey goes. So
great.
If you want to tell the listeners some about yourself, and then I imagine Suzanne is going to start talking possibly like in your first sentence. And
good deal.
And I'll step out of the way.
I'm ready. All right. Thank you, guys. First of all, I'm so excited to be here. I love Suzanne. I love your work. And I've listened to a lot of the podcast episodes as well. Joel, I got to work with you when you did the Three Sheets little breakout group. That was actually really enjoyable. And I would love to talk to you about that sometime, because that was life changing for me, actually. I'm Alex Regan. My pronouns are he and him. Let's see. I am an interfaith minister. I'm a coach. I'm an author. Of the book What Needs to Be Said that came out last May now, with Hay House, which was very exciting and also one of the most terrifying things I've ever done in my life. And I do coaching. I also do some speaking. I do preaching. I'm not at any specific church or organization. I kind of just rove around. I get invited various places to come in and preach, which is great fun to do as well. And what else to tell you about myself? I live in the great state of New Jersey now. I have lived all over this country and all different in Texas, California, New England, Kansas. I've lived all over Arizona. I lived all over this country. And now my wife and I are settled in New Jersey and we actually love it here. I love New Jersey. I've always loved the East Coast, but my wife was born here. So she wasn't always super excited to come back home again, but she's even enjoying that as well. So we're near her mom. So that's great fun. We live with our two cats inside and we have like a whole herd of outdoor cats, which is hilarious, that have taken over our kids' play set. Like we have a little playground in the backyard and they basically just live in our kids' play set. So we have some outdoor cats that are fun entertainment. And yeah, and I'm excited to talk about the Enneagram. I'm excited to join the cohort this year and dive into a much deeper level of it.
One of the things that I am taken with at times when we start to do a podcast is how comfortable our guest is with us and in their own skin. And sometimes people who are more introverted, which you clearly are not, people who are different Enneagram numbers than an 8 by number or by being an extrovert or an introvert or somewhere on that continuum. I understand that makes this more difficult for some people than others. And so I ask a different level question sometimes than I'd like to start with you. And so the first question I want to ask that we can, I think, work with for the rest of our time together, knowing that that's what I want to do with this question. I'm looking at that very intriguing cover of your book. And the title is What Needs to Be Said. And so I would like to know what needs to be said.
I feel like it's funny because I feel like that changes every day. I feel like there's new things that need to be said and need to be looked at. And even since the book has come out, so much has changed for me. You know, I spent so much time focusing on probably the last decade focusing on building up a coaching practice, trying to get clients, trying to build my online presence. And the more I noticed towards the end of this year, as difficult as it was to really be online so much with people and trolls and all of the stuff that's really happened online, part of me just actually stepped back and sort of pulled inside of myself. And I actually just started looking more into what I needed to do more inside of me that was internal work still, as opposed to that work I was trying to always do out in the world. So I guess part of what has needed to be said to me lately is, what else do I need to heal? What else do I need to do work on that's inside of me that's coming up? And like I said, you know, when we were starting, I did the 3 sheets with Joel, and that literally, I mean, that just opened me up in this entirely new way. It helped me look at things that I, you know, had still been holding on to that I didn't believe were my values anymore. It also helped me look at the groups that I belong to and how sometimes even though I participate or belong to a group, I don't necessarily, you know, believe all of the things that they necessarily believe either. So I think in some ways I've just been in this really, I've used this winter time to really go inward, you know, to sort of get quiet, which as you pegged me as an extrovert, that's not always the easiest thing. And as an 8, I've always been pretty loud and pretty, you know, sharing my opinion and what was going on. And so this has been a real like sort of time where the soil has been very fallow and like, okay, I'm going to still dive deeper and go into this. And so I think that what needs to be said is partly about holding what you think needs to be said loosely and not always feeling like it has to be this exact thing. And I know the exact answer to it. In fact, what's funny is some of the things I even wrote in that book, which is sort of part memoir, part self-help, were things I felt so certain of at the time over the last handful of years as I wrote it. And I still believe them to be true, but I'm holding it so much more loosely, I guess, is the term that one of my Buddhism teachers taught me in seminary, just to sort of not hold it as so confined. This is what it is. And I remember, you know, just a couple weeks back before the end of the year in therapy with my therapist, she said, well, what are you certain of? And I said, I'm only just certain of a few things. I'm certain of my wife, and I'm certain of being, you know, belonging to her family. And I'm certain that I'm supposed to be in New Jersey. And that's pretty much that. And I said, oh, and I'm certain I'm supposed to take this Enneagram training. And that's about where my certainty ends right now. And that's new for me, even as an eight, because I usually think I know the answers and think I know pretty well, this is how it is. So I guess that's a big answer to your question.
Yeah, I was expecting a big answer, and I like it. I'm so glad that you're certain that you belong in this Enneagram group, because I also am certain. And it'll be fun for us to look back on this conversation about that certainty at the end, because then we'll know why.
Yeah. Yeah.
You, as far as we know, you are our first guest on the podcast who identifies as transgender. That, I believe, is a reality that I am going to be able to embrace because of your willingness to teach me as we spend a year together the things I need to be taught and correct me when I need to be corrected. And I'm actually looking forward to that, because there is something about you and in talking with you and reading things, I feel safe with you. And it's very interesting to me to think about, oh my gosh, I surely hope you feel safe with us. And you wouldn't be coming, I suppose, to the cohort if you didn't. One of the big questions I have for you in relationship to identifying as transgender is, do you understand both and, as opposed to either or, in a way that you can articulate?
That's a spectacular question, because I have been a really all or nothing person, which I think is part of the eight as well. But I really am an all or nothing. You know, my therapist is always catching me. Okay, that's very all or nothing thinking. You know, let's look at this in a different way. And so that's interesting, because that is definitely a part of my personality, is that very all or nothing. But I also think, you know, as we were talking, when we were getting on, we were talking about Barbie, and one of my good friends said, I'd love to have a conversation with you about Barbie, because you must have a very unique perspective of the movie and of the experience, because you grew up assigned female at birth. You have lived through that experience, and now you walk through the world perceived to be a white, straight, cis man, usually, you know? And so I have this multiple perspective that is actually one of the things I find most fascinating about myself, if I could say, you know, that I really feel like it does give me perspectives that I can step into situations that most people cannot step into and see both sides of the story or the experience. So I guess in some weird way, that rubs into a little bit of the nine wing that I might have too. It's one of the only areas that I feel like I have some of that balance to see both perspectives. But I honestly think that's become one of the things that I cherish about myself most, is that I can see both sides and I can understand where I came from, where I'm going. And also, you know, for a lot of years, I wasn't sure I was going to like take testosterone, for example. And that's, you know, I've been on testosterone now for the last year and a couple of months. But for a long time, I just kind of was like, I don't know if I need that. We're going to just see what happens, because I kind of like being in that. You know, when I came out as he and him, because there wasn't even non-binary when I actually came out, that like that wasn't even a thing yet. That's even been more recent that we've said, you know, people can use they and them pronouns and things like that. But I do find I like to be in some balance between both spaces. And while I feel better saying I identify as he and him than someone calling me she, like it just feels more true to who I am. And I also don't necessarily have you know, this space where it's like, oh, I need to now just go be with straight cis men. You know, like I really actually still have a broad spectrum of friends in all different spaces and people that I connect with. And yeah, it's just, it's kind of an interesting, I don't know if that's fully articulating, but it's a very interesting space because I can kind of, it reminds me of high school. When I was in high school, I was like in sports and everything, but I wasn't necessarily a jock. But I wasn't necessarily, you know, I kind of had friends in every little group, like kids who were out back smoking, kids who were, you know, like I could just weave through all of the different groups of kids. Mm-hmm. And I had friends in all of those. And that's kind of what it's become now as my adult self. It's like I can weave through all these spaces where people can't always go in the doorways of, you know, I can kind of just like find my way through. And I have interesting relationships with a lot of the straight cis women in my life. You know, I have a joke with a couple of friends. We're very close. They're very close friends. And, you know, we'll be on Zoom and I'm yelling, I love you guys. And they're like, I love you, Alex. And we always joke, if your husband's heard you talking to a guy on Zoom, they're like, who are you saying I love you to? But it's me. So I have this, like, I'm allowed to do that. You know, there's a lot of these things I can cross these boundaries that we don't always necessarily let other people do. So it's fascinating, really.
Yeah, I love that. I love everything you said about that. And I think there's an opportunity for everybody to look at where they are both and, whatever that is. Joe, for example, is both and an ordained Catholic priest and a United Methodist pastor. And you don't get rid of one when you mm-hmm. embrace the other. And we are living in such a dualistic culture that I think we have to find out how we can approach life with a both and rather than an either or way of seeing. And I think transgendered folks are perceptually able, potentially, to teach the rest of us because we are assigned either or in terms of male and female. And I think it's great that you're an eight who's done so much work, because the more eights work on themselves, the softer they get. And there is in your ways of talking a softness with tons of confidence. And I would guess that is a byproduct of some of the pain that you went through to get here where you are today. And I would also guess that because the culture, and these are guesses, so you can say, yep, or no, you're way off on that. Because I'll be saying that to you while you're in the cohort. I'll be saying, yeah, no, that's not it. So you feel free to say that to me.
Good deal.
I think we tend to feel safer in either or conversations. And I don't think there's much safety there. Mm. And my girls and I, my two daughters, Joey and Jenny, and I have used the language for all of their lives. The three of us are not girly girls. And what that has taught us is that there is this continuum that we all should look at in terms of where we fall on the cultural identity of male and female.
Yep.
One of Joey's friends in college, all of her friends, most of her friends were guys. And one of them said, man, if you were just a guy, I would really want you to be my best man at my wedding. And it's because of where we fall on the continuum.
Yeah.
And that is a both and space. And I think it includes less judgment about things we don't know anything about.
Yeah. Agreed.
I hope that's true.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You mentioned in some of the info you provided the Breaking the Cycle workshop.
Yeah.
And one, I just want to bring it up because today, while we're recording this, is Russ Hudson's birthday. So happy birthday, Russ Hudson. And he co-taught that weekend with Joan Suzanne. Hold that for a second. And then you talked about being born, socializing as a female, as a two and a female.
Yep.
Can you talk some about that journey, that anagram journey of being born a female, people teaching you how to behave like a two, and yep, all the way to years and years later, you know, Russ Hudson Workshop, and now where we are today, and where you are, yeah, today, for that matter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, as a kid, you know, my mom is a very sort of like, you know, a church going to, you know, just, she's always done the, I mean, I know Suzanne doesn't understand that. She has always done the altar guild. She's always done like, let me, oh, you need cookies. You need more, you know, like whatever the thing is. I mean, my parents have taken in dozens and dozens of people into a spare bedroom in their house over the years because someone at church got divorced and then they're on this, they don't have a place to stay for 3 weeks. I mean, my parents have just gone above and beyond for everyone they come across in their communities and beyond. I mean, my mom is,
I'm sorry to interrupt, Doc, no, go ahead. I got to know now, what numbers do you, I know that you're gently walking through life wondering about numbers of other people.
Yes.
What number do you think they each are?
I think my mom is definitely a two. I mean, her motivation seems to be love. I think she's obviously seeking love from God, and that's how it translates, is like, I'll do all this for everyone else. God will love me then, you know, kind of thing. I think my dad might be an eight. I think actually my dad and my brother are eight. So I think all three of us are an eight and she's a two, which I think could be interesting. I mean, I've been really playing with this, trying to figure out, but my brother could be a seven. There's kind of this borderline back and forth between those in my head. But that's my guess, is that my dad is an eight and my mom is a two.
I'm going to start praying for your mom right now. If every single human in her life either needs something from her or is an aggressive person.
Exactly. Exactly.
Tell her I've got her covered. What's her name?
Judy.
Tell Judy I'm on it. Because all right, I can feel her space and it makes me, I literally have chill bumps.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
And she's tender and sensitive. And the three of us were just kind of always, you know, I mean, I can definitely go into my two, and the more work I've done, I go into that a lot, but we were rough and tumble, kind of abrasive, you know, a pretty loud, and, you know, there's a lot of anger, a lot of like throwing of things. And you know, my poor mom, I mean, one day I remember in high school, even she finally just like, that's it with the two of you. She goes, I'm leaving. She like went out and got in the minivan and she drove away and she goes out the window. She goes, I don't care if you two kill one another. And I'm screaming like, don't leave me with him. He will kill me, you know? And she was done. And she left for about 3 hours. I hope she went and, you know, saw a movie or went to the library or did something fun. But yeah, she, bless her heart, because it was quite a journey with us two rambunctious, crazy kids. So, yeah.
Good for her. Good for her for saying, you do whatever you want to each other while I'm gone. I'm leaving.
Yep, for sure. So yeah, I was really raised with that sort of mindset, and it's very, especially being assigned female at birth and them all very much assuming that's who I was, even though I know I knew at a pretty young age that I was pretty clear they were wrong, at probably about six. So, you know, that two energy was really built into me of that. I mean, we could talk about that again, back to Barbie, you know, we're taught to sit and be quiet and, you know, don't make inroads, don't like make a scene, don't, you know, just all of those things. And then how can you basically, I think tied in with the church was really that, how can you be a servant? You know, how can you help other people, put yourself last? It's not even second, right? You're like kind of coming in last from that sort of really unhealthy two perspective. And so that's really like how I was raised. And it never quite resonated, because in every space I stepped into, I always just sort of, if there was ever a vacuum of leadership, I stepped into it, you know, sort of inadvertently. And nobody liked that, you know, as the assigned female at birth, everyone called me a BITCH, you know, that was the energy that I got treated as. Like I was always pushed out of authority. Like they didn't want me, even though people would follow me naturally. And a lot of that energy happened. So, I had a lot of abrasive energy with pretty much every authority figure in my entire childhood.
Well, I was just looking at that in some of the notes that we have. And one of the things that I'm going to try to ask, I'm so desperately want to ask this right, because I'm dying to know the answer.
Go for it.
All right, I'm going to go for it. If you were seen as a bitch, mm-hmm, when you were living into your assignment at birth as a female, is that changed now that you're living in the world as a male? Is it like this behavior wasn't okay when I was assigned at birth female, and over here, now that I'm not living into that role, but being truer to myself, do people still have that pushback against your behavior?
So here's the weird line where that depends. One, if people knew me before I transitioned, so oftentimes at like, say, my work where I consult, they knew me before. So I still get that, you know, you're being too bossy, quit stepping in, this isn't your place. But in spaces where people didn't know me before, it's definitely perceived as different. A lot of times I've seen is just, oh, this person seems to know what they're talking about. Like, let's just go with this. This seems like a great idea. They're very confident. We'll go with it. So it definitely depends on the environment and what people know about me and my past, and if they knew me before. It's not so much if they just know that I'm trans. You know, like in seminary, I had a lot of situations and instances where a group of people would be like, oh yeah, I respect that and see that. And they didn't get put off by it, but then some of them still did get put off. So there is this interesting line that happens that sort of depends on how people are seeing me, you know, societally, or if they knew me before, et cetera. So it's kind of fascinating. But run of the mill, if I'm out in public or whatever in spaces, I'm definitely more just seen as, oh, that's just a white privileged guy. We'll just go with what he's saying, you know, kind of thing, because that's just what happens in society.
That is fascinating to me. Like, yeah, I used to be a bitch, but now I'm just really smart and see the world correctly and can lead people.
Yep. Yep.
That is so rich.
Yeah. I guess also I was going to say, so I started doing Enneagram testing and I kept getting a 2, and then sometimes I would get a 6. And then once I got a 4. And so I went through this whole thing of, am I any of these? And then when I started taking more classes with people saying the tests are not always the most accurate way to get the information, that's when I started getting like, oh, maybe this resonates with me. This resonates. And then the funny thing that resonated the most was when you mentioned, Susanna, one of your things that Richard Rohr had said, something like, you know, you'll likely find your number and you'll be like, I didn't want that to be my number. And you always, I've heard you say, except for 8s, usually they're pretty happy about the number. The irony is I never even listened to the 8 number. There was something about me. It was like, everyone starts with 8. And I'd just be like, that's not me. That's not me. And then finally one day my wife was like, I think that you're an 8, and we have been totally wrong about all this. And so then we started looking at it more deeply, and that's when it was kind of this aha. And I'll share this one funny thing with you. So, you know, we joke out in public that, you know, I have a consulting company, and we joke that my consulting company is not just for the normal consulting I do, but it's, you know, how people should drive in a roundabout, where people should park their car, and how they should, they're not properly in the space, you know, anything, where they should put their trash cans on the curb. And so we have this long litany of this list that goes on, that it's consulting LLC. And then we list all of these extra things, because I'm always pointing out, you know, someone should have done it this other way. And she'll say, oh, I guess they didn't ask you, you know, how they should have done it.
That's great. That's great. I'm glad you have her. She's going to keep you in check.
Always, always. Yep.
Yep. You could kind of get out on the edge, I think.
That's right.
I have another question that I wrote down. Let me see if I can find it.
While she's looking, when you brought up the test, I don't know why this, I've never thought about this before in relation to the Enneagram test, but a long time ago, probably like 18 years ago at this point, I was applying to work at a restaurant, and they gave, aside from like how competent you are, you know, can you do simple math, that kind of stuff, also some sort of personality test. and my buddy worked there and they liked him and he was trying to get me the job. And I quote unquote failed the test every single time. Like this personality test to get this job. So I did the, you know, competency test, aced it, you know, application, here it is. But then this other thing, and each time, so I think the first time I tried to answer how a restaurant would want you to answer things.
Yep.
And that didn't work. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to be brutally honest here then and try number two. So really honest.
That didn't work either.
And then I tried the hybrid one of, all right, I'll be honest about some things and then try to find the middle balance. And that didn't work either. I was like, all right, man, I don't want the job that bad. I forget it.
Yeah. And I relate to that.
I wonder if some people, when they're taking the Enneagram test and stuff comes back, you're like, I feel like I failed this test somehow because that's not me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that especially happens, interestingly enough, when somebody has told you what your number is.
Mm.
And then you take the test and it's not what some random person told you.
Yeah, try
again. You don't know what number you are. And so you try again and you don't get what you got the first time. And then you just don't know who you are.
Totally. And that whole motivation bit, I mean, when I started listening to you more and it was like, what's your motivation under it? That's what really started to get me into a different space, because the whole motivation of love under two, that's not what was missing for me as a child. That's not what I was seeking. I was surrounded by love and care and how can we help this and let's go help your neighbor. And like, that wasn't what, like, sure, later that became something that I was like looking for because it did shift when I came out. But that's not what was different for me. What was hard for me was the vulnerability, because I couldn't share with them my real feelings or what was going on, or when I felt weak or like I needed help. It was very much, especially for my older brother, buck up, like no crying, you know, there's no crying in baseball, you know, kind of energy. And so that was interesting as I started to look at the motivations, and that was like a lot of light bulbs going on for sure.
Okay. I need you to tell me how to pronounce S-H-A-M-A-N-I-C.
Shamanic.
Okay. That's what I was going to say, but yes. I just don't want to butcher that because it is important to me.
Yes.
So you say, I practice shamanic work and meditation as well as a mishmash of my own personal practices.
Hmm.
Joe and I are and have been very taken with First American spirituality or Native American spirituality, if people don't yet reference that as First Americans. And Joe has read and read because he's so drawn to the culture and the spirituality of the culture and the faith of the culture, all of those things. So I would love to hear you talk about your practice with these spiritual disciplines and your mishmash. And if we had had this conversation before you knew that you were an eight, based on the amount of energy that you have in a day to see to and be present for the things you're doing in the world, I would have said there is no way you're a two, because you wouldn't be able to do all the things you're doing and carry other people's feelings while you're doing it. So I love that you found the space where you are. I love that we get to talk about that in the difference in your assigned gender at birth and who you are now. I love that we get to do that also with, and I thought I was a two and I know I'm an eight. And yeah, I love all of it. So talk to me about those spiritual practices.
Yeah. So the shamanism I got into right after I got sober back in, guys, we're about to hit 11 years. Next Friday while we're in LTM will be my 11 year sobriety date anniversary. Well,
let's remember to celebrate while you're here.
Okay. Will do. Yeah. I got sober like within the next week and a half. I was like, I need something. I don't know. I don't care if it's even church. And there was part of me that was like, I swore I'd never return to a church, you know, at that time still. And so I looked up online. I found this little spiritual center sort of near me. I walked in, I met the little reverend afterwards. We talked. She said, hey, I think, you know, we should talk, like, let's do some sort of spiritual counseling, come in and I'll help you through this. Cause I was just a mess, you know, like a week and a half sober trying to figure out what next. And she recommended that I see her friend who does shamanic work. And I was like, okay, I don't totally know what that is, but I'll do anything at this point. You know, I just knew I needed help. And so I called her up. I got an appointment with her and we started doing this work that was some sort of hybrid mix between sort of talk therapy in a way. And then the shamanic work that she did. So again, shamanism is such a broad thing, like all the, you know, Native American, First American, all South American, Celtic. I mean, it's in most cultures throughout history have had some form of shamans and shamanism. So I try to speak broadly about it because I really just do my focused version of it, not, you know, like this is what it is as a whole. So what her work was, we would do some drumming, which was really amazing because it would be, you know, you'd be laying on the bed and she would be drumming, you know, like 2 inches from your head. And it was just the most, you just would go into these meditative spaces that were just, that I've never had with just regular meditative music or things like that. Just amazing. And then, you know, she'd sit down and I'd keep my eyes closed and she would begin to ask me questions. And through that process, you know, as you'll read in my book, we went back through a lot of my childhood trauma spaces of things that had happened. And we did it through what's basically called a shamanic journey, which is basically like a meditative visualization. You're basically just visualizing like, okay, I return to the, you know, the 6-year-old me who's like playing in the front yard where my mom was screaming at me for running around in the sprinkler without a shirt on, you know, and then we kind of like do some work within that space. Well, what could have happened differently? Or, you know, like, let's take your adult self in and talk to the little version you, you know, so it's similar to a lot of different types of therapeutic things in that way. So I started doing that work very frequently. And I mean, I went weekly for a while. And then over time, go ahead.
Before you leave drumming.
Yes.
Oh my. People who have never experienced drumming are missing a lot.
Agreed.
Joe was with Richard Rohr in some settings where they were all drumming.
Yeah.
And I think we tried every drum in Santa Fe to find the right drum for Joe.
Yep.
And he did some drumming the other day for the first time in a long time. And I thought that takes me somewhere quiet and safe.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It is spectacular. So anybody who doesn't know about that, lean in because it's really a thing.
Yeah. And you can, I mean, even there are great soundtracks you can listen to on YouTube or that you can buy on iTunes or whatever. And I mean, but if you can do it in person with someone drum, I mean, it's spectacular.
Yeah.
And if someone will do the drumming for you, it even, I mean, you can do the drumming and that's great. And you get, but if someone else is doing it and you just get to sink into it, whew, you know, like it's spectacular. That began this huge new sort of spiritual journey for me where I just started to go back in time through all of my childhood things. I started to go through to past life things and really open up like, why couldn't this be real? You know, it really just opened up my mind and my whole soul and self in such a new way. And then after a few years of that, I asked her, how can I learn to do this with other people? And so I went through a training with her to learn to do that and hold the space with other people. And then, you know, after that, I started working with clients and people with it, but I've always kept it up as this spiritual practice of my own. And whenever I'm in a space of trying to figure out what's next, where should I go, what's going on, you know, I often return to that space and just, you know, begin to ask questions, you know, get into the meditative state and start to ask questions, you know, what's next? Am I on the right path? Where, you know, whatever the things are. And that's just always been something, it's been a way to God for me, because I think, you know, maybe it is part of the eight energy, I don't know, but like that quietness has always been terribly hard for me. Sure. It's been so hard to just sit down and be with myself. I did a year of meditation and most of the days was a journey that I did. And that helped me. If I just sit and try to just in silence with no words, no music, no anything, it doesn't always, I can't always get there, but for some reason, this has always been a space since I started that back in 2013 that I can access and go to. And it's been, yeah, it's been a lifesaver for me in so many ways. It's just helped me through.
I was just thinking about that for numbers who have a hard time settling down so that they can do a centering prayer practice. We often suggest that they use prayer beads, and we, Joe created prayer beads for LTM that are based on the fruits of the Spirit. Mm. And they're very effective. And we have suggested that people could listen to music. We've never suggested drumming, and we will from this moment forward. I can hardly wait to go in the other room and talk to him about it.
I love it.
Well,
I'll have to bring a drum down there. That way we can bring it on the plane. And
if they let you bring your drum on the plane, Joe will bring his.
Okay.
So you just fun. Bring
okay.
it.
Like okay.
You bring it.
Okay.
Ooh. And I will go somewhere while y'all are drumming.
There you go.
And be glad right. I went and hate to come home.
Always. It's like, oh, things. We got to go back again to this place.
That's
oh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yep. All right. All right. And your mishmash?
The mishmash, I guess, is just some form of, I have loved the centering prayer that yeah. since I've been, you know, trying to like that sort of idea of welcoming things has actually been helpful for me. Even if I can't get through the whole thing and just sitting in the quiet, but just actually welcoming, like using that language to say, okay, man, I'm in tremendous pain tonight. I'm thinking it shouldn't be this way. That's not getting me anywhere. What if I welcome that in, you know, really shifting that mindset. So that has been helpful to me. Also, you know, sometimes I will do, you know, like somebody's audio recorded meditations or things like that. I've also done some of the hypnosis type stuff, tapping, you know, it kind of just is like whatever feels like in the moment, I have to really just do what feels like it'll resonate. Because if I'm not very good with one of my seminary deans always used to say, try using the word devotion instead, you know, because devotion tends to work a little bit better for me because I don't do well with like, this is a scheduled thing. And this is like, it has to be done. And there's a pattern we have to get to. Mm-hmm. It's like my body needs to just be like, this feels good right now, you know, and like, I don't know how I'll feel tomorrow at 8 a.m. So I'm not one of those people who like has it all written out on a schedule and says like, okay, at 8 a.m. every morning, I meditate. So that's been an interesting process for me. So yeah, it's just kind of a hodgepodge.
Too rebellious to have somebody tie you to that. However, our oldest daughter has started every morning, not at 8 a.m. necessarily, not at any given time, but she does a sit every morning, and it's been really pretty helpful to her.
Okay, that's good.
So, you know, give yourself some space in the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And see how you do.
Yeah.
I have a closing question, and I want to remember, Joel, to ask it to all three. And that is, what are your expectations, both for yourself and as a participant for the group, for this cohort?
Good question. Well, I think this is a couple fold thing for me. I think there's some multi layers to it. One, I found it, you know, not at all. When you get to know me more, you'll see my life happens in cycles. Like I always end up coming back around. It's time to now heal this at a different space. And so it was almost hilarious to me that I was like, of course, the Enneagram person who resonates with me the most happens to work out of a church and her husband's a priest and all, you know, like that. I chuckled at that because of like, of course, because now I have to enter back into that space, but from here and through the Enneagram lens, which, you know, even churches are responding to that now. Like there is a broad, it kind of overlaps to secular and church, which doesn't always happen. So I think that's part of it. I think it's like, this makes sense that this is a great space to enter back into. There's probably some healing left to be done for me to walk back into that type of community because I haven't I have returned some, but it's usually as like a guest preacher or things like that. So I think there's something to that. Cause even just being in some of the LTM groups that I've been in, it's mostly people who are Christian, you know, happens to be the overlap. So I think there's something to that. I also think this is the first, I mean, since I started coaching and doing this stuff, I mean, I've taken training after training of shamanic training of the different people. I've taken other Enneagram classes. I've gone to seminary. I've gone to all these different things. And it always was for that external work, right? Or it was always for like, how can I justice out in the world, you know, kind of thing. And this, there was this moment when I told my wife, I said, I'm going to apply to this. I mean, I don't know if I'll get in. I know they get a lot of applicants, but I'm going to apply. I said, and you know why I'm doing it? This is for me. This is like for my, like I was saying at the very beginning, right now I'm in this place. What else do I need to heal for me? I'm less focused out there and on the work I need to do to help the world. And I'm more focused on helping and healing myself. And I've just seen the Enneagram make, I mean, even in my relationship with my wife, I mean, since we started doing this more seriously and really doing the work and studying it, our relationship has changed dramatically. You know, and I've worked with Dr. Deborah Egerton too. And she always tells me, you know, my husband and I have a before Enneagram and an after Enneagram. It's a different relationship. And we have noticed that in our lives too. And so that's part of it, I think, is that I just want to keep doing the work. That's sort of like what I always fall back to is how can I better myself? How can I heal more? How can I, you know, do this more? Cause that's how I know that the outer world is actually getting better, because my relationships outside of me change and I know they're not doing work. Like, right. I don't mean that mean, but I know people offhand I could name who I know they're not in therapy. I know they've never done any self-help or self-development work, but our relationship has completely changed. And I know that solely because I'm healing whatever inside of me that needed healing. And so I think that's part of my goal too, is just to continue to heal that space. And I just, I hope that I also can be a bridge to what we talked about half of this episode, which is about the church and understanding trans people and this fear around it and how we can bridge some of those gaps. Because I think that's important. And there aren't a lot of spaces I would walk into still in a church that I would necessarily, there are specific churches I would walk into and still do that at, you know, but it's not something I would, you know, try to go into, say, my parents' church and try to do, sure. You know, and so I have felt welcome just through the language you've used and the way that you've talked so openly about, you know, being supportive of LGBTQ folks and all, and your own kid and all that stuff. And so that made me feel like, oh, this is okay. This is a space I can step into. So.
If it helps you with the priest turned United Methodist pastor, he was born in the Bronx.
Love it.
So you're going to be able to connect right there. In terms
love
of
it.
The part of the country that is home.
Love it.
Or feels like home, I would say.
Yes, it does. I'll bring my Yankees hat then. You tell him.
I will tell him. And
okay.
We don't
care about any of that.
That's Joel might cry a little, but will be okay. Yeah.
Well, the drum first. Drum first. Okay. I'm going to really hold you to that.
Okay.
Maybe bring cut this. I don't know. But I was thinking about it. Do you think raised female two, do you think that the fact that Enneagram 2 and Enneagram 8 shares a line, it made that a little bit easier to navigate?
Definitely.
And as opposed to if we're socializing little Alex to be a two, but in Alex's truth is a 9 or a 6 or a 7 or something, if that would have been a more complicated development. Does that make sense? Is that might be a crap question. It's just been on my mind since we talked about it.
I think, I mean, your mom's shaking her head. Yes. So that's my first instinct to say yes, because I definitely have, I listen to a lot of eights who don't always have as easy a time going into the two, but I think I have an easier time going to the two because I was raised in that very two environment. And I think it was like my mom was trying to raise me with her and my dad and my brother were the eights. And I think it was like that, but I just was always like, I'm over here, I think, you know, like kind of thing. And that was sort of the battle my mom and always were having, right? Like, you should put these dresses on. And I was like, I'm over here. I don't want to wear that, you know? So I think that is actually part of the bigger thing that what they thought I was. And maybe this goes to who we think everyone is, you know, right? We always sort of assign people as this is what you are based on just my interaction with you, or what makes me feel comfortable, or whatever the things are. And it's just like the curiosity to say, oh, well, I don't know that I am that. And having that space, I think, is actually what we could all use a little more of, right? It's just the curiosity behind what would this look like? And like back to your, or Suzanne, the and or, you know, that it's not just this or that, it's and both, sorry, you know, it's and both. And I think that's what we're missing societally right now. Like, that's why we're in this turmoil that we're in, is because we've lost complete sight. You know, we could all use a little more nine energy, right? They can see both sides of the picture. And I think that's, you know, that's taken me a lot of years to build that into my own self. Like I said, I've been very sure of what all the answers are. And I've loved this liminal space that I have been in the last even just couple of weeks of like, I'm only sure of a few things and that's it. And I'm going to just sit in this. I've spent my whole life trying to, that's why I like the 5A too, because you guys talk a lot about liminal space. And I have been in a hurry to get the hell out of liminal space most of my life, right? Like, I practically try to jump through a doorway, you know, to get through, like, hell no, don't leave me in between here. And now for the first time ever, I'm like, oh, this is not so bad to be in this. Like, it's kind of warm. It's kind of like, ooh, what's next? I don't know. Like, that's okay. And it's just like, it's sort of the first time ever in my life that I've been in that place. And so that also feels perfect timing for next week, you know, to jump into. Then it's like, oh, this is all the soil is fertile and like ready to, like, you know, to bloom and blossom and plant more things too, you know? So
did we get earlier in the conversation, and I'm sorry if I missed it, your wife's Enneagram number?
We did not. Her name is Doris and her Enneagram is 4. And so she is a big artist and feels the world so deeply and has spent a tremendous amount of time feeling not understood or seen or heard. And so that she's also an immigrant. So she grew up with immigrant parents, or her parents are immigrants, that spoke a different language. So she spent her whole childhood feeling like she wasn't understood. And so that's been so helpful for her too, to really go into her number and understand it more, and things are making sense for her that she's just like, oh, that's why I, you know, do this, or that's why this has been such a struggle. And, it's kind of fascinating too, how the Enneagram plays a part in, like, it's like the chicken or the egg, you know, which can't, cause it's like, she's perfectly set up to be a 4, just like from her childhood and all the experience. And that's what she is. And it's like, you know, chicken or egg, which came first? And it's just kind of, it's such a beautiful thing to look at and try to, you know, figure out. So
the last two things I think I have to say right now are that, I think we all need to be more curious about so many things. The idea that we have the answers and that we don't have questions is just dangerous.
Yeah, agreed.
Because I'm pretty sure we need to be asking more questions.
Agreed.
And need to be less sure. And I just wanted to say that 8s and 4s do very well together because they both really value authenticity and truth.
Mm.
And it really helps them connect.
Hmm.
So y'all enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoy definitely.
Well, I can hardly wait until you get here. There are lots of other really interesting people who are going to be with us for the year. And I don't know what happens exactly when people walk into the MICA Center and we start a new cohort, but it's quite something.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt that you will make it better.
Hmm. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm really looking forward to it. And like I said, it's been a pleasure. I mean, I feel like I know both of you. I mean, Joel, I had a couple of weeks, you know, we were Zooming and having a small group, but I just feel like I know you already. And I feel your big heart just coming across right on Zoom. And I'm excited to, you know, be a part of this and to learn from you. Cause I know, like I said, everything I've heard you say about all of this and just the way you see the world, the way I've heard Joe talk, it just feels like you know, it's where I'm supposed to be. And that there's so much that I can learn and take in from all of you. And that I think in reverse, I think there's things I have to share that hopefully will benefit all of you and your community as well.
For sure. Can't wait.
Can't wait. Me too.
Thank you so much.
Well, I can't wait to meet you all in person and give you all big hugs.
What a great episode. And the future-oriented Seven and me can hardly wait for y'all to meet our third member of this series, Matt Lesser, in the next episode of The Anagram Journey. But now let's talk about the God of Wild Places and April 26th. Millions of Americans disillusioned with organized religion yearn for meaning and transcendence in their lives. Many of them are finding that in nature. When pastor and theologian Tony Jones, PhD, had his crisis of faith, brought on by personal trauma and broken relationships, he sought solace in the outdoors, paddling a canoe, hunting with his dog, butchering deer. When he walked out of the church and into the woods, he left the orderly pews and numbered hymns for chaotic spaces and untamed wilderness, and he rediscovered God, a God who brings peace in the midst of storms, a God who lives in the community of our fellow creatures, a God who's acquainted with death. This is the God of Wild Places. When you've got Barbara Brown Taylor, Brian McLaren, Lillian Daniel, and Suzanne Stabile endorsing your book, I think you're doing something right. So when we booked April 26th, and Tony says, I think my friend Ronnie would be a great addition to the evening, then you visit ronniefaust.com, listen to some of his work, and realize this is going to be one of the greatest nights at the Micah Center all year. So as you know, with limited space at the Micah Center comes limited seating, but LTM is thrilled to offer an online option to join us if you can't be in Dallas or if you miss out on an in-person ticket. The God of Wild Places is available everywhere April 2nd, but you can pre-order now on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. We'll have copies available for you to get signed when you meet Tony the night of the event. Come with your questions for Tony and questions for Joe and Suzanne. Join us for the music, join us for the community, join us in Dallas or online April 26th. Go ahead and sing us out, Ronnie. So come. Don't be